We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, it was a little hiatus. I was on vacation, I admit it. Brad was still working hard. Don't worry. Don't take it out on him. But we're back in the Ins No Ball podcast. Not a ton has happened, Brad, but wanted to get people caught up a little bit on where this roster is at and what the needs are kind of going into, I mean, we're in the final month here, basically before the draft. So the Steelers are still signing people, and we'll talk about some of the very recent signings. I think it was one yesterday, the day before. My days are all running together. I drove through the night, Brad, on Tuesday night from Georgia to Pennsylvania. It was about 12 hours. And I had driven through the night the week before to get down there with my family. So I did basically in a 6-day span, I did two drive through the night all nighters, which let me tell you, I do not recommend.
You know what's weird is like I can stay up super duper late like in normal settings, but driving I get like my I'm doing the, you know, like the head bob, yeah. Like I think just staring at the open road, and then the one counter is like, I'll blast music. But if you have kids sleeping in the back seat, you can't exactly be like blasting music, you know. So I'll drink like a Celsius or do whatever I can to combat it. And I'm pretty, you know, caffeine definitely affects me. But yeah, I'm impressed. I respect it. I hope it was a good trip. But I don't recommend.
It wasn't, but I version. It is hard. I actually fall asleep during the day when I'm driving, like sometimes. So I don't know. I mean, the periods of time at night are obviously longer. You're going through the whole night. During the day, though, if I drive in the afternoon, it's like a more of a struggle for me, like that afternoon lull where I'm like nodding off. And then you have to stop for meals and bathroom breaks with the kids and everything like that. So this was, I mean, in retrospect, like I do think there are some advantages to it. If the kids slept a little bit better, I would probably be more inclined to do it. But I have 2 daughters, 7 and 4, and they were off and on, I would say. It was a mixed bag of results through the night. It wasn't terrible for sure. They both did a great job. My wife, she wishes she would have slept probably more than she did. And I wish that too. but overall, yeah, it was a good time. But as I was down there, I was kind of tracking some of these lower level moves. And I was like, what is Omar Khan's? Like, what is this offseason? Like, I just am trying to like understand everything. And I don't even necessarily think, it's not even that I disagree with all this stuff. And I've kind of hinted at this on other podcasts, but I just want to kind of get right into it today. It's just like, what is the plan with this roster, like offensively, like especially? I think defensively, I want to talk about Dante Jackson a little bit. I even want to talk about Deshaun Elliott a little bit. But overall, I can kind of get like the Patrick Queen kind of signing like makes sense to me. Like if you're just talking about from a skill set or a talent standpoint, just say from a fit of what you want at a certain position, what makes sense and what hasn't so far this offseason. I don't know that there's a lot of signings that like necessarily make sense from a scheme and like this is what we want position. Like I think the Fields move made sense, especially given the cost. I think, you know, Arthur Smith having some option elements to his offense or can certainly have those made sense for Fields. Does the Russell Wilson move make sense for a team that like maybe they didn't know at that time they were going to get Fields? You know, I think you and I both think that they were very interested at the very least. So we'll see. But does a move like that really make sense for this team? Does the fit with Arthur Smith make sense? Does Arthur Smith makes sense for the run game and what we have with a couple backs and an offensive line who has been much better at a different style of running than what Arthur Smith has typically brought to the table. Even at the wide receiver, like what can you make heads or tails of this Quez Watkins signing, Brad? I mean, I know it's his low level signing. I'm probably overthinking it, but like, and I'm not like mad about it at all, to be clear. I'm trying to understand the approach more than anything.
It's actually funny because this is why I started it last year doing the free agency grades that I do, where I grade the major moves that come in. The first year I did it, I just gave like a grade for each move, you know, A through, well, I'm nice. So like A through D, it's hard to get an F. It happens. But anyway, and I realized I need to split this up between I did scheme slash fit or something like that, the grade, and then a value grade. Because I'm with you where like I like the value of most of the things they've done, but is it a good fit? Does it fit with the infrastructure in place already? Whether, like you said, that was Arthur coming to them or now guys coming to play for Arthur. I mean, Watkins is a good slot receiver. So we've talked about how they need, or I shouldn't say good, but he's a capable, can play decent number of snaps in the slot receiver. And we talked about how that has been a need for them and something that they, you know, needed to improve upon from last season with Allen Robinson. That's been where he primarily lines up. And I wouldn't say he's like a weapon in the run blocking game, but I don't think he's a complete liability. We know that Eagles team, you got to block at receiver and you know, the Jeff Stoutland's run game has been as good as anyone's over the past couple of years. So yeah, it's a minimum deal. It doesn't though, like address like the loss of Deion, like there's still a glaring need at the position. If that's what you're asking, they haven't addressed that. You'd hope you get 25 catches, 250 yards and two touchdowns. That's a fine outcome for Quez Watkins.
Yeah, I think for me, the big question with all three of these guys, Van Jefferson, Quez Watkins, even Marquez Callaway is already on the roster. And to the different category, I'll put Calvin Austin. I'll talk about him in a second. But I wonder with all three of them, like all of them were decently productive in 2021, which was a little bit of time ago. And it was, you know, obviously those situations, they were productive and they were kind of, whether it was because of injuries or because of a lack of other options for their team, they were elevated in the pecking order. And they didn't really like wow in that role, which is why they're all where they are now, like these kind of castaways and afterthoughts. So maybe we're reading too much into it, all of us, and we're just kind of, you know, the Steelers have no intent for these guys to be wide receiver two or wide receiver three at this point in time. But right now they're like running out of options, sort of like the center conversation. It's like, okay, well, who is going to be wide receiver three then? And there still are some guys that aren't signed that are out there, but like Van Jefferson, I at least get from a fit standpoint. If he has to be wide receiver three in this offense, he can block a little bit. Okay, like I get it. I don't Quez Watkins like to battle with Calvin Austin for a roster spot, maybe. Like he's not been a punt returner at all in his NFL career. A couple kick return reps. I just like obviously they don't need that now with the Patterson signing. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but I don't really know. And I'm not criticizing it, honestly. Like, I don't really think it's a big deal because it's just, but I am just trying to figure out from a fit perspective, are you getting players that fit what you want to be? Or are you not? And if you are, like, what do you want to be? Like, and that's the whole, goes back to the whole marriage of Arthur Smith with Russell Wilson with this run game. It feels like a total, like, all three just feel like a very bizarre fit together. And so a part of me is just like kind of confused about that. But then they've added Cordarrelle Patterson to this group. And that's interesting too to me, Brad, because obviously there's a kick returner level, but they're also, Patterson, I'm sure, is going to be running back number three for this team. You know, saves your roster spot, all that kind of stuff on game days. So like he can be fill both those roles. Patterson has been Arthur Smith's guy as a running back, and not really anyone. I have to look, but I mean, like that has been the scheme that he's like basically like learned. So is Patterson the liaison now between the strong personality of Najee Harris and to some extent Jaylen Warren too, who have not necessarily been in this type of a scheme? To be the buffer between them and Arthur Smith if things aren't going well. And I'm not criticizing this, to be clear. I'm just thinking out loud. Patterson comes in with a knowledge of the system that they've run in the past. So that to me, and maybe I'm reading too much in, suggests Arthur Smith is probably going to do some pretty similar things to what he's done in the past. And he needs a guy that knows it, that can buy, is bought in and can get the rest of the room to buy in. Is that his role now, like on this team, to be that buffer between those players and between, and to try and get full buy-in, help teach the intricacies, all of those things while also filling this role as a key returner, obviously. I don't mind the move at all. In fact, I like it, to be honest. I also think that it could indicate some things that could be problematic if there isn't more buy-in. I think Smith is going to be the one that should have to change to revolve around his players. You and I both know it. Sometimes it works that way in the NFL, probably more than it ever used to, but ordinarily, it doesn't work that way in the NFL. Like the coach comes in and runs what he wants to run and what he feels like is best, and you get a buy-in, or they'll just move on or find somebody else, or it'll just go poorly. So I just wonder if that's a part of this situation with the Patterson signing. It's like this didn't help clarify for me, or maybe it did in a way that I don't like what this team is going to do and how they're going to be able to fit all these pieces together.
He was also teammates with Justin Fields, the rookie in Chicago, so there's a decent connection there, and
Yeah, that's
maybe, you
right.
know, some comfort level. I would think at this stage of his career, it's like 90% special teams. Like, I agree, he will be the third running back on the roster, but in part because you can get him on the 48-man active because he's also going to be returning kicks. And it was very funny that he signed. Obviously, they were talking before that, but the timing of the signing, like an hour after the league made the new kickoff rule official. And I think he will be a weapon in that regard. I think he has the stop and start ability as a straight line guy, but if no one else is moving and he already has a head of steam, he's going to have some field flipping returns. Even at his current age, he still has that ability to turn the jets on and is a hard guy to bring down in the open field with one player. So, no, it's a fair point.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The receiver thing, even though we understand that like Arthur Smith offenses, even last year, you have Matt Collins, who's like a punt gunner, kickoff gunner, you know, blocker as your number two. They don't have, even with that context, you still do not have a number two. I will say this, though. Obviously, you mentioned like you're losing opportunities. You know, Josh Reynolds, I think, could be a perfect hypothetical number two in this type of offense as a great run blocker, a reliable underneath weapon. He's now a Denver Bronco. Obviously, Mike Williams was going to take a visit. He goes to the New York Jets. There are still, if you're looking for a Mike Williams skill set, I'm not saying I'm super excited about these players, but you know, there's DJ Chark and Marquez Valdes-Scantling as like two guys that are 6'3 plus downfield threat, vertical threat, you know, type of players. Again, you're talking cheaper deals than Mike Williams. You know, he got 1 year 10. Those guys, I think you're looking at like 1 year six with some incentives, whatever. But yeah, like there isn't a long list of impact players. And as good as the draft class is, like we talked about, there's no assurance the guy comes in and plays right away or the Steelers will let him play right away. And even though you think it's going to be a heavy 12 personnel offense, which we agree there, you know, we should have probably talked more about, frankly, the impact on Darnell Washington, hypothetically, with Arthur Smith. But even still, the receiver two can't be on the roster right now. That would be a problem, in my eyes, at least.
And honestly, and yeah, maybe wide receiver three is not as big of a problem for the reasons you laid out, like just because of the scheme. But in a normal scheme, in a normal modern 2024 NFL offense, either of these guys being wide receiver three would be an issue. Like to me, they both had opportunities to be a wide receiver three and proven that they are not capable of that role. So at least, like I said, in most offenses, perhaps there's a path in this offense, although I probably wouldn't agree with that path if they take it, but perhaps there's a path for like you just don't need wide receiver three. But then what happens in case of injury too? Like that's the other thing you have to think of. And that's why I always like shake my head at these teams that don't build depth to wide receiver. It's like this is such an important position on your team. Like, and you have don't have Patrick Mahomes the quarterback where it doesn't matter who you put out there. Like you don't have vintage Tom Brady. Like you need guys who are going to produce with the balls in their hands and do special things and make tough catches. And so that leads me to this, Brad. And now we've already talked. We talked a lot last episode about the fact they don't have a center on this team. It doesn't seem like they're even considering James Daniels there. Herbig is like your emergency center type situation, but they don't have a starter. Herbig's probably going to have to be the backup at this rate. They basically put themselves in a situation where they have to address center with one of their first two picks. Wouldn't you agree with that?
It's funny that I hadn't thought of the James Daniels piece as a Chicago guy. I guess he has to at least be prepared for the possibility that could happen. But
they haven't even brought that up, have they?
Like, right. They've not said a word about that because I would have seen it somewhere. No, they haven't, but it's a good shout. And you mentioned Herbig. To me, he's like, I don't know, he's kind of stiff. Like, I just don't know I don't know if I love the idea. It might be their emergency plan, but, you know, anyway.
It's Daniels, a bad plan.
It's a bad plan, yeah.
Yeah. So that means, like, right, they have to draft one of the first two picks unless they trade for somebody or something changes in the next month. Like, you don't want to be in that situation. And I like the center class. I think they could end up with the best center in the class. You could talk about value and the position, all that stuff. I'm just saying that Jackson Powers Johnson is as elite as people think he can be in the NFL. Nobody's probably going to care about that much down the road. I do think that going into the draft where you have to address a position is a bad move. Unless you're like picking maybe in the top couple or you're a rebuilding team, then it's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, the Steelers don't see themselves that way, clearly. So going in with these obvious holes, I'm just not a big fan of. I know they tried to sign some centers. I'm not necessarily saying they didn't even try, but you kind of got to close the deal too as part of it. And so everybody knows I'm a big Omar fan from what I've seen so far, but I think this is a pretty pivotal offseason. He's made a lot of moves. He's clearly shown the ability to be aggressive. They've left this open hole there, right? The Dan Moore situation is he has 1 year left in his contract. If they still have this big need at wide receiver and they still have an obvious need at center, it feels like their first two picks are going to be center and wide receiver going to the draft. Like, you don't have a playable wide receiver two option or wide receiver three option, really, but you're definitely not a playable wide receiver two option or a playable center right now on your team. So you have to address those two positions with the draft. So right now they've pigeonholed themselves into having to address those two positions with their first two picks, which means the earliest they could pick tackle, unless something changes with their draft picks, is in the third round. You could still get a good player there. The idea that the Steelers are going to start or play like a tackle that they draft in the third round when they didn't even play Broderick Jones last year as somebody they traded up for in the first round, like until they absolutely had to, that is far-fetched to me. Like, Dan Moore's already been terrible and they haven't chosen to bench him, so there's nothing can change there. He could play terrible and that's just more of the same thing. And perhaps they just get to a point where they're fed up. But I say all this just to say that if they're going to do that, and that's the approach they're going to take going into the draft, tackle is third on the pecking order because you literally have a guy that, even though he's been bad, you believe is playable at that position, and you do not have one at center unless you change your mind with Daniels, which it doesn't seem like they're going to. And you do not have that at wide receiver too right now. So they go into a draft right now with two gaping holes. My question to you, Brad, is do you think that by the time we get to the draft, both of those holes will exist at center and wide receiver two, both of those holes will exist to the degree that they currently do on this roster? Or do you think something is going to give there? Because it just seems like to me, Omar Khan is too bright of a GM to put himself in this situation on draft day. Like, it feels like there has to be something else coming from him that's going to fill one of these two spots. I don't know what the cost of that will be, but it feels like that has to be coming and they'll be able to focus on two of these three positions rather than one of them.
Yeah, I'll say I think receiver, I just think is most likely to get addressed just because the available talent remaining in terms of free agency, so not requiring a trade, but they certainly could. And I tweeted out some Arizona Cardinals because I just feel like they have three and a half guys that can play center on their roster right now. So it's kind of just an excess of players. I think receiver makes the most sense. Some of those guys, names I just mentioned, there's a couple others too if they want to, you know, get into the again, like more wide receiver three builds and types, but for them could be a wide receiver two just because of the personnel they're going to roll out there. I was just looking at the website at the depth chart. Tackle also, they didn't address swing tackle. Like, even if you think you're going to draft a kid early, you're talking about depth. Like, Dan Moore is entering a contract year and is not very good to begin with. They should have signed a swing, and there are still a couple names out there for swing, like Cam Fleming is still out there, and Calvin Anderson, but like, they should have a swing tackle on the roster right now also.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, right now, like, at least they hope Dylan Cook is that guy. I think they want to develop him to be that guy. He certainly impressed last year at camp to a degree, and it was like, oh, this guy has the potential to be that type of player for us. But yeah, it's definitely a question right now. It's not clear, you know, who if he's good enough to be in that role. I don't think we've seen him in a real NFL game yet to this point. So you're right. Last year, obviously, he was the fourth tackle, and as it stands right now, he'd be the third tackle. And so they're going to draft one, I think. It's just a matter of, like, what type of pedigree is that guy going to have? And so this is where, to me, Brad, I think the Steelers are going to make a move a wide receiver still, like via trade. Yeah. I think it's going to happen before the draft still. I don't know whether it's going to be Ayuk. I hope it's not a mistake that they make, but I just think they're going to look at that spot and be like, okay, we got to get better at this spot. We can't go into the draft with these clear holes. We haven't even talked about some of the other ways they can upgrade, like cornerback, to me, like, is an obvious one. Nickel, I think you'd love to be able to spend one of your picks on nickel. Now, the problem is if you trade for Ayuk, you're trading one of the, you know, probably one of those picks. And so that leaves you, okay, well, now you just used the 20th pick on a wide receiver. You know, it wasn't in this draft, but you used it on a wide receiver. And so you still need, so what are you going to do with your second round pick? You have to draft a center. Like, you don't have anybody on the team. So, like, that would be obvious at that point that center is going to be your second round pick. And if you still have you have two thirds, obviously, but they're, you know, not super high thirds. And so, yeah, you're one of those tackle, one of those nickel, probably you're trying to fill spot. But again, you're just filling holes because you literally don't have a nickel. Like right now, you don't have one. Like you don't have any depth at outside corner either. You don't have another outside corner. Like Dante Jackson just tore his Achilles 2 years ago. Like, is he going to play every single game this year? Like, I don't know. Like,
he hasn't been a while, of his career.
Who's even the depth? Like, and those are the positions I look at right now. I'm just saying they just seem way too thin. And they've added some pieces after free agencies died down, but they haven't really been like difference making pieces. Like Dean Lowry was a solid signing to be like a depth defensive line piece. Like, he's not going to have to play a lot there, which is really good for him that he'll just play like a smaller role. He'll be a run guy. Leal, if he makes the team, will be a pass rush guy as their depth. Monty Adams is your backup nose. Loudermilk is sort of similar to Lowry. So you've got fine depth on the D-line. Like, you have kind of made it clear, like, you don't really need edge or defensive tackle help in this upcoming draft especially in the position they're in. Like, next year it would be nice. I just don't think they're in that position this year to be able to do that. So right now it's just like too many holes, and I don't really see the pathway to filling many of these, especially because there's been like no buzz about them at corner. They seem like completely enamored with Dante Jackson. Like, this whole time they've been seeing this elite all-pro player while everybody else in the league is just like, yeah, cut him, we don't care. Like, and like the Panthers are like, yeah, we suck, we're still going to cut him. Like, and the Steelers have been like, he is the apple of our eye. That's like how the reporting's gone on this from multiple sources. And frankly, it pretty much blows my mind because, again, if we're going to talk fit and the direction a team is going in a position, it seemed like size and length and athleticism were all like big priorities for them at corner. And now you've got one of the smallest corners in the league who can only play outside. They've talked a ton about flexibility, right? Pat Pete can play inside and outside. That was like their favorite thing ever, right? They were all about it. Mike Hilton didn't have that. You know what I mean? Arthur Millett didn't have that. Like, okay, well, that's not – Dante Jackson never plays inside. So, like, do you project him to I watched him. I don't think he's an inside corner. So, like, what's the fit here? Like, I really – he comes from the zone-heaviest scheme in the league other than the Colts. Like, and so now he's going to play in a scheme that's much more – or it's been, at least, the recent years, much more diverse. I mean, they still are more zone probably in Pittsburgh, but, like, it's still going to ask more of them. Like, they want to go more man. If they had corners they could run last year, they probably would have. And honestly, Jackson's probably been better in man the last couple of years in the limited size sample size that we've seen that he has been in zone. So I'm just totally confused about so many of the fits. And so, like, what's the prototype of this team? What is the type of player? Like, every team's got types, right? It doesn't seem like the Steelers do right now. Like, I'm just kind of at a loss as to their approach to this whole thing this offseason. And, like, from everything from the holes they still have at outside corner, I mean, your backup outside corners right now are Luck Barkou and Corey Trice.
Yeah, Luke Barkou. Yeah.
Luke Barkou, who's not played a snap in the NFL. No. Corey Trice, who's not played a snap in the NFL and has spent most of his time as a football player the last couple of years, like, seriously injured. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I mean, is Darius Rush going to play corner, or is he a safety now? It seemed like they were moving him to safety the little tiny bit we saw of him last year with the Steelers. So, like, your top corner, backup corners haven't even played. Like, I don't even know if they're NFL players. Everybody's like, we got Corey Trice, we're good. Corey Trice missed his entire rookie season with an injury. Another serious injury. He's had a couple of those in his past now. You can't count on him for anything. Even to make the roster, you're not counting on him. Correct. He's coming to camp to compete for a job.
Yes.
Like, that's it. Like, so anybody thinking like, oh, this is our CB3. Yeah. No, there's no confidence that that's your CB3 at all. No, zero.
Zero.
You can love him, and it doesn't matter. He's a seventh round pick. No team is banking on that guy. So they are just in a spot where, like, I it feels like there's too many holes to fill before the draft, and I don't expect them to fill all of them, but they've got to do something because wide receiver two, center, what is going on at offensive tackle? If you're going to challenge Dan Moore, is it going to be this year? Are you just going to ignore that position entirely and pray that Moore and Cook are enough opposite Broderick Jones and continue to play Broderick Jones out of position when you've already said we want to move him to left tackle eventually? Like, why wouldn't you want to accelerate that process and do it now and take a tackle like Kamarius Mims in the first round and put two Georgia guys together and if that's an option for you? But right now, it's not really an option because they have to get a wide receiver too and a center with their first two picks. And then even if you make a big trade for Ayuk, you're still in a draft, you know, detriment because you don't have enough picks then at that point in time. So I'm thinking out loud here, Brad, but I just don't quite know how they're going to fill all these holes before the draft. I'm not doubting. I'm very curious to see because I don't think this will be a silent team over the next month.
I do think one name, I think he got cut in between the last time we potted and now, is Avante Maddox. You're talking about slot corner, just because, again, the Andy Weidel connection, which also there's the Andy Weidel connection to Quez Watkins. So Maddox was one of the highest paid slot corners in the NFL. Obviously got cut for a reason, but only 28. He is a pure slot only. He's like 5'9", 180 probably.
He put some safety too, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm saying he's not an outside corner depth in any way.
Oh, right.
Form.
Right. No, I was just saying. Yeah.
No, for sure. For sure. So, which, I mean, again, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to also add. So, you know, that one I think is very interesting, but then you look at the rest of the list, like it's a bunch of former Steelers, whether it's Pat Pete and Levi Wallace or like a Steven Nelson, you imagine they're probably not looking into those type of players. Adoree Jackson, I think, settled in a little bit as the season went on last year, but, and then it's a bunch of question marks, like guys that have missed time for injury or whatnot, Christian Fulton, like it's not a very inspiring list of players. At any of the corner spots, I mean, you can find a depth piece, but it's not a guy you're like super excited about relying on to play meaningful minutes or meaningful snaps, what have you. And like you're saying, like if these were the only issues, and you're like, all right, hey, we're gonna draft someone late day two, early day three to be the, you know, you'd say, okay, there's some risk there, but fine. Like they're coming in as a third, fourth round pick to be the number three corner or the number three receiver. You know, okay, there's some risk there, but whatever. But it's like, no, you can't do that because you have to address literal starting jobs at a bunch of spots. And I really think even swing tackle, I didn't know they were high on Dylan Cook, but I've never heard of the guy until you said his name 5 minutes ago, for being honest. And like, I don't care. Like my mock had Amarius Mims going to them in the first round, and I feel like that was an appropriate selection.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's where a lot of people have gone with their predictions for what the team's going to do in the first round. I don't know. I honestly don't know yet. I don't know how it can't be wide receiver and center the way it's currently set up. Like, and that to me just means tackle us to wait another year. And that's why I said the ripple effect of the Yonte Johnson move is that Dan Moore's probably weren't going to be a starter, and this is my pathway to thinking that. It's just the way that it's set up right now, that like you have to address that position now, and you don't have other options to address it unless you make a big trade, really. And so now you're kind of stuck a little bit and center, same thing. And so now it just, yeah, the odds that if you draft a tag in the first round, odds that they would have started before a guy you drafted in the third round are probably pretty high, and higher at least, that Moore would eventually have been supplanted this year. And now you're more likely to have, because you have a whole wide receiver as well, now you're more likely to see them go that route. Although you could have made the argument a corner, that hole would have been there too, but it did not seem like the team cared as much about corner, and nor does it now, since they seem pretty settled with Dante Jackson and what he's done. You mentioned Avante Maddox. He's actually a Pitt guy too. I don't know if you remember that, but
okay.
So there's a connection there a little bit too, but injured the last 2 years. He's played only 13 games in the last two seasons. So that's, and his frame, oh man, they'd be so small at corner. They'd be fast, but they'd be so small at corner. Him and Dante Jackson next to each other, it's like, my gosh. I think Maddox is probably one of the lightest DBs in the league, 5'9", 184.
Yeah, that checks out. That's what I would have guessed, like 5'9", 180. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm out looking at the depth chart. Like, there's even more. I mean, we love Nick Herbig. As a Nick Herbig podcast, he's your only depth piece at edge. And I know they like playing Watt and Highsmith 900 snaps a season, but if one of those guys goes down, is Herbig just playing 65 snaps in a game? Yeah. Like, is that?
Yeah, I think he is. And I also think Marcus Golden's still out there, I would bet.
Yeah, he is.
He eventually comes back probably if that's fair desire. You know, he could be one of those late.
That's probably the real answer, which, you know, I know you would be, you know, wouldn't be exciting. The real answer probably is they're going to circle the wagons in like June, July post-draft and just sign a bunch of guys that were here last year, which is like, you know, very unencouraging given what they probably could have done.
Patrick Peterson, Chandon Sullivan, yeah. Levi Wallace, bring them all back.
Correct. Correct. All still available. Mason Cole available.
I got to tell you, it's crazy that Pat Pete, Chandon Sullivan, and Levi Wallace were the starting three corners for this team last year, and nobody signed them. Keanu Neal, he and KZ split that time. KZ's obviously still on the roster. Got to say, it's pretty wild. He's still out there available. Like, it's almost like none of these guys were NFL caliber players last year, and we
almost
tried
like
to
that. It's almost like times. That. Yeah, but 97% of snaps, Pat Pete, Levi Wallace 65, Keanu Neal 40, Chandon Sullivan 40, and none of those guys are on a roster, and it's April.
Yeah, exactly. And teams are loading up on DBs everywhere because you need a lot of them in today's NFL, and yet here we are. So, yeah, I think it's pretty ridiculous. Pat Pete obviously keeps saying that Mike Tomlin said he could be back. Tomlin said the same thing, I think. So there is that possibility. That would be an absolute tragedy, in my opinion, if that's the best you can do at that point. Not so much just signing him, but just, like, if that's literally, like, you went through the whole offseason, and you cut this guy, and you were like, yeah, we actually just couldn't do any better than this. Than this, based on how he played last year. Yeah, I want my nickel to be able to tackle. Like, that would be a pretty – I would love that, you know, so – be very against that if it ends up coming to that. I do like the Deshaun Elliott move, as we talked about. I do think he plays fast, so, like, I'll kind of – but they clearly – I thought they wanted to get more athletic in the secondary, and I do think Jonte Jackson at least gives you that. He is still very fast, so there is – like, that trade is helpful. I think really what I want is my guys who are going to be around the line of scrimmage and, like, in the box and in the flats. Like, I want that speed to improve, right? I don't – your corner, you need speed, but for different reasons. I want my team speed, pursuit speed to be faster. And Queen definitely fits that. Elliott isn't fast testing, but he plays really fast, flies around, comes downhill, hits people. So I do get – like, I do think they actually went and addressed some of the issues that they had defensively with speed as a unit. Like, they were just a very slow unit on the second level and at the safety position once Minka got hurt for most of the year. And I think that that was a big factor for the team. And so I do think that's the one thing they did. Or I'm like, okay, I saw the pathway here. I saw the plan. I saw the execution. They just need more of them, right? They don't have a nickel, and they need more help at outside corner for sure. And they, I mean, is KZ going to be your third safety now this season? That maybe they're more comfortable with that than I am. I would just cut him probably, but Killebrew will obviously probably be your fourth safety on game days because of special teams. And so maybe they feel like their safety room's kind of settled now at this point. KZ, your third guy, and then Trenton Thompson is your fifth emergency guy. I actually played decent last year. You know, you could probably do worse, but yeah, just still a lot of holes on this roster that I don't necessarily quite know how they're getting filled. And if Cole Holcomb is not ready to play, you didn't trust Mark Robinson at all last year, right? You basically started anybody you could find off the street over Mark Robinson last year. So who is your linebacker three to open the season? They're just a very shallow team right now with a lot of question marks on the roster going into what's going to be a very, very important draft and a very important month before the draft.
Yeah, no, I think we agree. They are going to be busy and still making a lot of moves. Sure, smaller moves, yes, but meaningful moves over the next, 3 weeks before the draft.
Just want to talk quickly before we wrap up about some of the guys that they did sign. Dean Lowry was probably, I don't know, probably plays the most snaps out of anybody they've signed, like, in recent year. Maybe Patterson's played.
Yeah, and I don't hate the Dean Lowry addition. He wasn't quite as good in Minnesota as he was in Green Bay, and he was up and down in Green Bay, but like you say, he probably is more of an early down guy, but he had some pass rush juice at times. And I do think at this stage of his career, the key is really just, like, he was a 600 plus snap guy for 5 years in a row in Green Bay. And then it kind of dropped off a little bit. But yeah, I think he's a solid piece. I think you play him 350, like an Armin Watts type of role, and he'll give you a 350 snaps that you're happy with. I know last year wasn't good, but I think he was hurt most of last year.
I would rather have just re-signed Armin Watts, but this isn't. He doesn't give you pass rush juice. Yeah, not anymore, at least, or hasn't for years anyway. Yeah, you mentioned it didn't play a lot in Minnesota. Injuries were part of that. Also just wasn't a very impactful player in the snaps that he played. He's usually like a high floor guy. The baseline is pretty clear with him. Like, he's not going to kill you, but he's also just like the floor is just very low. The ceiling is just very low with him as well. So yeah, don't hate it. I also think his role might be so small, like, that it doesn't really matter. Like, Loudermilk could beat him out at this point for, like, playing time. Yeah. Like, that's not out of the question. If Leal brings it and has a great camp, he would beat him out for pass rush reps, I think. But Leal could also get cut. So, yeah, I don't hate it. If there's an injury and he has to play more, I might feel like they should have done more. Like, I just liked what Watts did last year. To me, that's the type of player. He's going to be cheap. He's blossomed in your system a little bit. He's shown pass rush ability. Do what you can to keep that guy. I forget what he signed for. Where did he go?
2.2 mil with the Patriots. It's a good little signing for them.
Yeah, it is. It's a nothing. So yeah, I would have kept him for sure, but they obviously felt like they could let him go. So I'd say Lowry. Yeah, it's mostly going to be run defense at this point. It's mostly going to be gap holding type of stuff from him. Is he better than Loudermilk? Probably more consistent than Loudermilk. I think Lowry, one thing that's always blown my mind is that he's listed. What is he listed? Six. He's six, listed 6'6".
Yeah.
He's never looked 6'6" when he plays.
No, so he doesn't. Yeah.
The height, his pad level is impressive. Yeah. And Loudermilk is like a stand straight up and play like Will Golston type of guy. And so they're a little bit different in the way they play, but they'll be battling for playing time with each other, I think. So it's probably a fine signing for depth purposes. I like Watson. I didn't have many desires this year in free agency for the players on the current roster other than that you keep Armand Watts.
That was it. That's so, all you asked for.
Yeah. That's all I asked for. They couldn't even give me that.
No.
I would like if Marcus Gordon came back as well. We'll see. Lowry was one. Patterson, we talked about a little bit what that role is going to be. We talked about Quez Watkins a little bit as well. Kyle Allen is a third quarterback. I mean, we're obviously, if you're down to your third quarterback, you're done. What does Tom Moore say?
Yeah, Tom Moore of the Colts. Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah. Everyone knows the quote. We don't practice blank.
That's right. And that's how they feel about it at this point. But I don't know. I think it's QB3's go. Like, all right. Like, I'm cool with it, right?
Yeah, a guy that got traded for a fifth-round pick a couple of years ago, from Buffalo to Washington or something like that. He's a solid QB3.
He's played 1,000 snaps. He played 885 snaps for Carolina in 2019. That was obviously the vast majority of his career snaps. But he hasn't been like a train wreck other places. You know,
QB3 again. No, he's a solid depth veteran. Now there's the new rule now. I'm guessing this will be him where – you can be on the practice squad and then have unlimited elevations to be the emergency quarterback. So he wouldn't be available unless it was, you know, the dreaded, like both guys get hurt ahead of him. But now you can carry a guy on the practice squad. And if you can elevate him every single week to be the emergency guy, he is a perfect example of a guy who would do that because you get paid at the veteran rate when you get elevated. So you basically are paying him a salary. He basically is on your 53, but he's not. And so you save a roster spot. So my guess is that's Pittsburgh's approach with him. Because last year Mason was on the roster. So you're taking up a third, you know, QB spot. I think Allen fits that mold of, look, we'll elevate you every single week. You'll be the emergency guy. You won't play unless, you know, both Justin and Russell get hurt. But if they do, then you're good to go. But you're making the money of an actual rostered player. I think he is the, like, picture perfect person to do that type of thing.
Yep, I agree. It seems like they have a plan mapped out for that spot, which is good. And then there were interesting comments by Tomlin, just that Justin Fields' time to compete is going to come. I'm not going to read too much into his statements, just that it did seem a little bit more open-ended than, you know, I think Russell Wilson is going to start week one. I don't think there's any question about that, but it did feel a little bit more like, this thing is going to be an evaluation process for us as we go. And Wilson's going to get the first crack at it and first chance to play, and we'll support him and all this stuff. But Fields is in this thing to play, you know? And so he's not going to, there were no like sit and learn type of dialogue. And so I do think that's, I don't think it's, I'm not overreacting to it. I just think it's notable that like Tomlin seemed pretty excited about the potential of seeing Fields compete once he's in the system and knows what he's doing a little bit more. So
I agree, though. I think he didn't have to leave the door just even if it's slightly ajar. He didn't have to do that, and he did. I think he could have just kind of he could have still like touted the idea of competition and like everyone being motivated, but kind of still nudged more towards like it's Russ's job for now, which he didn't do.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Let's be real. I mean, Pete Carroll and Sean Payton, I don't care as much about Nathaniel Hackett, but even Nathaniel Hackett, who had to deal with Aaron Rodgers many times throughout his career. And like Rodgers has also definitely been a player that has not always played by the book, and he has done things out of structure because he doesn't want to play within the system. And Wilson is the peak example of that. They've all gotten fed up with him at some point with Wilson. So, and they've been like, you know, we're doing something else. And so, yeah, I do think that the chances of that happening with Arthur Smith, one of the most churlish individuals in the world, who's changed his quarterback multiple times over the last time at with the Falcons, and even with Mike Tomlin, who has way more patience than probably most of these guys, but they Pete Carroll, like, you're more patient than Pete Carroll. I don't know. Like, I do think that point is going to come with Russell Wilson, where it's just like, okay, we're not dealing with this anymore. We don't have to put up with this crap. Like, we have another quarterback on the roster who can play and is going to actually, maybe we'll see. Fields might not do it either. We have another quarterback on the roster. We at least think has the upside to be able to do what we're telling him to do, rather than you continuing to turn down open guys in our offense to run around and try and play hero ball.
Did you see Sean Payton? I know you were traveling, so did you see his interview at the owners' meetings about it?
He said, was it a difficult decision to move on for us? He's no.
And he was like, what's the one way you can prove your offense? Take fewer sacks.
Yeah, right.
I was like, all right, just
you
say
should have seen Russell Wilson the year before you got there, Sean Payton.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So yeah, there's what the Broncos, Vikings, and Raiders do in this upcoming draft is probably one of the more fascinating draft storylines that I've seen. Because they have all three have no, I'm not Sam Darnold's not an answer. Please stop with that. All three have nothing at quarterback going into the draft, and none of the three are in position to draft a quarterback in the first round. That we rarely see that, where like three teams with just nothing at quarterback, like worth talking about, and nope. And I mean, they could obviously trade, but the first three spots seem pretty set, like quarterback. So would they trade up for QB4, or do they sit where they are? And then you've got obviously the plot line with the Giants, and they have a quarterback, but they probably don't want him. Would they trade him to the Broncos or something like that? Would they trade Daniel Jones to Denver or something? Like, yeah, there's still a lot of moves left to make here. But can you remember the last time? What they're picking in the teens, right? Where's the Raiders at?
11, 12, 13. Yeah, Minnesota, yeah, 11, 12, Denver, 13, right. Raiders. Yeah, 11, 12,
you
13.
You remember the last time three teams had no? I mean, even if you wanted to say Sam Darnold actually, like, is star, the who's the Raiders starter
Darnold's
star
the best
now?
Of the three. Well, I guess Minshew's better. He could probably make the argument. So it's Darnold, and then right now it's technically, what's his name in Denver?
This isn't good. You don't even know his name.
They signed not Jared Stidham. Is it Jared Stidham? Is it Stardom Stidham?
Yeah, Stidham's there. Yeah, Stidham. Stidham and DiNucci. Ben DiNucci and Jared Stidham are on the run. That's it.
Yeah. So Darnold, Stidham, and Gardner Minshew. And Minshew's like fine, but he's not good.
Wait, Minshew's on Denver? I didn't even see
him. No, he's on the Raiders. So 11, 12, 13. Sorry. So Darnold, Minnesota, Jared Stidham in Denver, and then Gardner Minshew.
But nobody's seen Darnold. Somebody saw Darnold as a starter 2 years ago, Carolina, right? He was
like decent the last like 6 weeks of the year in Carolina, but they were
and then
already,
he had,
you know,
one of the worst games I've ever seen from a quarterback in the last week of the season. They beat the Saints, right? Didn't they?
Yep.
And he had like his stat line was like one of the funniest things I've ever seen. He threw for like 43 yards and like three interceptions.
Correct.
It was wild.
It was tough.
Yeah.
He's not. He's not the guy. The QB coach's former teammate.
And I don't know if anybody even sees these guys as starters, including the teams that they're on. Like, that's my point. Like, that everybody knows are not starters, clearly. And, like, not even, like, I don't even think they're, like, stopgap guys. They're just guys you had to bring in because you don't have anybody else on the team. There's nobody else available in the league for your team. And so, like, that's where I look at it. And I'm like, man. And, like, Jacoby Brissett could actually start for one of these guys. But instead, the team that's drafting a quarterback got Jacoby Brissett. So some of these guys are going to be doubled up. You know what I mean? Like, at the top.
Yeah.
Like Jacoby Brissett's not great, but like he'd be way better than anybody on those three teams
for sure.
And he's not available for them now because a team that's probably taking a quarterback got him. So I just can't remember the last time we saw three teams outside the top 10
that
absolutely need a quarterback to start this season for their team that right now don't have a, I mean, like, unless they trade up and give up something, and one of them is going to probably make this move before, like, and two of them are going to be left with nothing, more than likely.
The Raiders one's crazy to me. Obviously, Denver, like, it's also bad, but, like, we, you know, the Russ thing was the plan. The Raiders one where you give Christian Wilkins insane coin, you give Gardner Minshew, like, the best backup contract in the NFL. You have Devontae and Jacoby Myers and all these things. You also don't have – they literally don't have a starting right guard or center on the roster right now either. And they have, like, all these massive – like, I love Christian Wilkins, but you give 4 years, $110 million, we don't have a quarterback or a right tackle on the roster. It's a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see how it pays off.
It really is. It really is. I don't know how this thing's going to unfold, but I'm very curious because I think that there could be – like it could lead to some chaos on draft day, and maybe somebody gets traded a quarterback that we aren't necessarily expecting right now to see get traded, because there Sean Payton is, he wants to take L's for another year because he's lined up to be one of the worst teams in the league right now.
Yeah, no, and no.
Maybe they are going to be regardless. The Raiders probably will be regardless, which is why their stance on moving Devontae Adams doesn't make much sense to me. But man, I just, yeah, I mean, just Dan Graziano just reported, I think, on NFL on ESPN, sorry, that the Vikings and Raiders are both desperate to move into the top three, but only for the right guy. He believes that's Jaden Daniels and not Drake May. Also a very funny plot line that
I'm telling Drake you right May, now. I'm Drake telling May's you fun. Right now. This is the Will Levis of there's no chance. I refuse to buy it. I'm not trying to be a Jaden Daniels hater. Drake May is going second overall. I'm sick of it. I don't want to hear it anymore. Okay. I'm done with it. Drake May is a Washington Commander. Go look for some real estate in the DMV. I think this is the biggest smokescreen in the history of time. Anyway, maybe I'm wrong.
That's very interesting. It seems like it's been trending for a while in the other direction that it was going to be Daniels at two, maybe, and we'll see another guy at, I don't know, who McCarthy at three seems more likely right now than Drake May does, the way that Lee's talking. But they did this with Mac Jones too. Like we could definitely see. Wouldn't it be crazy if the Vikings benefit though from and get Drake May with Kevin O'Connell and Jordan Jefferson and Jefferson and all the Justin Jefferson and all those guys? Like it seems like, man, that'd be like from a pure football standpoint, like I'd love to see Drake May fall to the Vikings. Like not the Raiders, maybe the Broncos, not the Raiders, because that situation's gonna be a mess here in the next couple of years. But yeah, I can't remember a time where we've been in a situation like that where 11, 12, 13, like all need them that bad, and they're almost certainly not going to get – only one of them is probably going to get one of the guys, and it might be the fourth drafted guy. Like
that's the thing, too. You're getting the fourth quarterback. Like it's not even like you're getting – and like, you know, yeah. It's obviously a good group of quarterbacks, but that is the crazy part, too.
It really is. Last thing, the rule change. Not all the rule changes, but this stupid – tackling rule, this stupid hip drop rule. What are your thoughts on this? Everybody that follows me knows, like people saw my Twitter blowing up this weekend about it, but what are your thoughts on this?
So the first thing is just like the NFL's lack of acknowledgement of how we got here to where you can't launch into an offensive player. Like the reason hip drops started was you can't just drive through a player anymore. You might get a body weight or you might get launching if you leave the ground. I'm not saying with the helmet, just in general, if you drive forward. So then got defenders say, okay, well, I can't like drive into a player. So I'll just like, put, you know, just bring him down by any means. So A, it's that we don't appreciate like how we got here. B, the video they showed four examples in a video that I think Pelissero tweeted out. And the second and third.
Yes.
Well, first of all, so they were just like, it's impossible to not do what they did. It's completely impossible. And then the Logan Wilson tackle, which we all thought and assumed was the poster child. Okay, this is a hip drop. This is illegal. Don't do this. People that don't know what I'm talking about, Logan Wilson, the Bengals linebacker, tackles Mark Andrews. It's literally, he swings his body forward, has the weight, drops down. And it's why Andrews, you know, effectively missed the rest of the season with lower ankle, whatever, on the left side. Yeah. So from an actual rule language standpoint, one of the like bullets of the rule is lands on the player's like leg or ankle. You can't control where you land. Like you can't, if the guy moves his legs or doesn't, that's going to be the, and I think that's why Wilson's technically didn't count. Cause like his butt did hit the ground, but Andrews, the weight of him still was carried by Andrew's leg. So all of that, A, and then B, just the officiating of it's going to be a disaster. Like, You're trying to do that in real time from 20 yards away and try to, you know, do they check? They meet all the elements of a hip drop. It's going to be a nightmare.
The NFL puts out, there are all these elements of a hip drop down. It's like, oh, great. So everybody will go through a full freaking checklist every time they throw this flag. Like, ridiculous. Like, what are we doing here? Like, and I understand there should be elements to it, but this is the whole point of why you can't make it a rule, because you can't enforce it. And that's what the NFL just truly does not understand and has never understood. They think they can over-police the sport that's not meant to be over-policed. If you do not want to play this sport, that is fine. Like, if you want to accept if you're not willing to accept the risk that a hip drop tackle could happen, but by the way, I actually never thought that Logan Wilson was a hip drop tackle. I tweeted it at the time and people lost their minds, but you're right. Most of everybody else thought it was a hip drop tackle. And that's where you get to this point where, like, we can't even agree on, like, the poster child example for this. Like, and I just think it's such a bad idea. It's so likely to be misused. If you could tell me it was going to be like 90% accurate and only going to take, then the NFL also, what they said, there was like how many hip drop tackles last year? Like 200?
One a game, I think they said.
Like average of one a game?
Yeah.
No way was there one a game. Like not real ones. So I like that I agree. Just means already they're looking to over police this thing.
And that's what they
I
usually
do. I
want
to see one more flag a game, Brad.
Yeah, which 15 yards too. Like a meaning, like not like a 5 yard procedural, a 15 yard penalty.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's going to be a disaster. And what was I going to say?
I also think not only is it going to be a disaster, it's going to continue to build the narrative that against the officials. So in some ways, and I can't help it, like you get so frustrated on these game days. I don't even care who wins most of the time. Like I just can't, like the game is unwatchable compared to what it used to be. And I still love football, but we're just getting further and further from what football actually is. Like you can't, you can hardly tackle guys anymore. You never see a hard hit in a game and aren't like, where's the flag? Like looking around, like you just can't enjoy the product the same way. Like it's that simple. Like you can't, they've taken the game and they've changed it and adjusted it. And they continue to do so. They're taking the football out of the sport. And to me, that's like not cool. Like we have to accept that there are risks playing the game of football. If you want to play it, like that is just what the sport is. If you take out those risks, or as many as the league has taken out, you get further and further away from what football is supposed to be. I'm totally fine with the head stuff. I've said that over and over again.
Sure.
They police that stuff terribly, and I think that should be the easy stuff to do. Like, they can't even do that right. So asking them to determine what a hip drop tackle is in live time, there is just no way they can do it well. They can't do the simple stuff they're tasked with now well, let alone this. So all is this going to result in is over-policing the sport, over-penalizing it, finding more defensive players, hurting more defenses, leading to more NFL production and sustained drives that aren't because players did well or scheme did well or any of this stuff. We're going to have more of these box scores. It's like all this hidden yardage. Like, is this team even good? Like, do they even deserve to win games? And obviously I'm over-exaggerating to some degree, but there will be games like that. Even if it's not like the full season sample size, will still tell us what we need. It becomes harder and harder to actually judge who's good at football and who isn't within the context of a game. Did what they do work or did it not? Or do they just benefit from the fact that the penalties went their way that day? Like that is becoming a bigger, bigger variable in games. And it's a variable that's more uncontrollable than it should be by teams. And I'm less inclined to blame teams for a lot of this stuff and more inclined to blame a league that has gotten further and further away from what their sport actually is. And because of that, it's going to affect more and more of the outcomes of games, the results of games. And I think that's a shame. That's not what the sport should be. It's not the way we should be policing it, especially when it's already hard enough to call the flags that they're already calling, to add one that is just going to up the level of difficulty for officials to the degree that it is just egregiously bad, in my opinion. And the NFLPA even said, look, this is our bodies on the line, and we're telling you not to do it. And the league was like, nah, we're doing it anyway. We don't care. Like, I'm like, well, what is the player?
Yeah, you know, the next layer of it is, too, and obviously we care more about the on-field product, but also they're going to fine players all day long for it. And the fine system, we need to get to a point where we have, like, not this podcast, but, like, the NFL ecosystem at large has a conversation about the fine system in the NFL and how out of bounds it is and how you're basically just docking pay and actually not paying players as much as you really – like, Jalen Warren is losing full game checks for blocks. Like, it's, you know, again, you know, obviously, I mean, you were, you know, less of a, you know, fan of the Kazee suspension. Those, and again, you lose money there too. But, like, when you can have a call that is not called in the game, no penalty, no one notices it, no one talks about it, and then flash forward, a guy is losing 50 grand for a tackle. I'm telling you, we're going to get every Monday morning, Tuesday morning, whatever, we're going to get this laundry list of tweets from the, you know, the main NFL Network guys. Here's the 15 players that got, you know, fined 25 grand for a hip drop. It's like, well, no one got, they're not like, yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Huge problem. And what I wonder is, and I've said for years, nothing will change about these rules because we will keep watching as fans. Obviously, as media will need to, like, it's part of our job. Like, fans will keep watching. The NFL sport grows in popularity. And the league thinks that if nothing's wrong with their process, like if the result they're getting is good, then there's nothing wrong with their process. It's a backwards way of thinking. It's bad, but are they suffering for it? No, probably not. And unfortunately, that's how this stuff works, is that they don't often suffer for it. The fans suffer for it. The players suffer for it. But the league itself doesn't suffer. And that's part of the foolproofness of the NFL being as popular as it is and them being able to do whatever they want and operate, it, frankly, in corruption with this kind of power, I think. And so I do think the only thing that can change it is the players standing up and saying, we've had enough, we're not doing this anymore. Maybe that happens in the next CBA, which is when, 2029?
Oh, it's 2030-something. Is it an 11-year CBA? 2032, yeah. I think?
No, maybe it's further on.
2031?
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so long way off. So we're stuck here for a while, yep, probably. Or players just decide to take a stand. That's unlikely. But again, you're talking about fans or fines. With fines, the issue is a lot of times the players who are most affected are not necessarily the bigger names, or the bigger names aren't as affected because they have the money like to be able, yeah, to pay it, and they're just not going to make a big deal out of it. So they almost has to be like the less affected because of what they make has to be as concerned about it as those who are primarily effective, concerned enough to make their voice. Like if Patrick Mahomes, you know, JJ Watt's doing it now that he's out of the league. He's one of the top critics, but he's out of the league now. Like it has to be guys in the league,
yeah,
that are like putting this kind of pressure on the NFL saying like, fine me every game if you want. Like, I don't care, but like, I'm not going to take this land down for guys like Jaylen Warren who aren't making as much, for players like that. Some of these fines do get rescinded from what I've heard behind the scenes.
Yeah, you
but
can appeal.
Rarely is there an announcement about that or is anything said publicly.
Yeah,
that.
You can appeal it and get it reduced or just outright removed. It happens a decent amount, but that also speaks to the bogus nature of it in the first place. If you were that convicted and taking someone's money away, right, I'm not saying it shouldn't be, you shouldn't be appealable, but you're also proving, oh yeah, we get another eye on it. And actually you're right, we'll give you 25 grand back. Yeah. Like, you know,
and if you don't go through the process, like we just get to pop, like we just get to say, yeah, like, fine you. Like, and so that is corrupt too, because not all the players, will want to go through the process, and it's another thing on the plate. And yeah, I mean, they'll just be like, I have the money, whatever. And so they just are overfining players, and it's resulting in just a really mess of a process, because yeah, you're just getting, it's just an absolute mess the way that the system's set up right now. So that something will need to be done about it. I just don't know if that's going to happen before the next CBA. And even then, the NFL is this way of being like, hey, we'll offer you this if, you know, you give us this. And then it's like, okay, well, are the players at the table with the CBA going to fight hard for those that are making the bottom dollar, you know, in the league, the purposes, yeah, at least, you know?
Right.
I don't know if it's going to happen. So anyway, here's my thoughts. I had to get a rant out about that because I think it's just utterly ridiculous. And I just hate what it's done to the sport. I hate what a lot of, you know, I end up getting more angry during NFL Sundays at the way the games are over officiated, that I can't even get to the football through all the mess. And that just, it's frustrating. It's too bad for those of us who love the actual sport. It is too bad. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll be back next week with some other good content. Hopefully the Steelers make a move by then. That'll be nice.
Hopefully it's pro day season. Things are going on. So yeah.
We've got to talk draft at some point, even if they don't. So we're going to probably launch into that in lieu of the Steelers making a move next week at some point. So get ready for that type of content coming from Brad and I. Until then, appreciate y'all. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Yins No Ball podcast.